चंद काए, ओम नमः चंद काए, ओम नमः चंद काए, जयंती मंगला काली भद्रकाली कपालिनी दुर्गा क्षमा शिवदात्री स्वाहा स्वाधानमोस्तुते जय त्वं देवी शमंदे जय भूतात्यारिणि जय सर्वगते देवी कालरात्रि नमोस्तुते मधुकाय ताव द्रावी दात्रि वरदे नमः रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि महिषासुर निर्नाशी भक्तानां सुखदे नमः रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि शंभस्यैव शंभस्य धूम्राक्षस्य च मादिनि रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि नाथेभ्यः सर्वधा भक्त्या छन्दिके दुर्तापहे रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि देहि सौभाग्यम् आरोग्यम् देहि मे परमसुखम् रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि देहि देवि कल्याणं देहि परमं श्रियं रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि हिमाचल सुदाना संस्तुते परमेश्वरि रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि इन्द्राणी पति सबारं पूजिते परमेश्वरि रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो देहि द्विषो जयि देवि प्रचण्ड दरदण्ड दैत्य दर्प विनाशिनि रूपं देहि जयं देहि यशो
I wanna know what love is.
dehi duisho jehi rupam de jayam de yasho dehi duisho jehi
Good evening. Again, I'm so happy to be with you and to enter into our fourth week of the class. This is this class which began on the first day of Navaratri, the nine-day goddess festival, and which will complete on Diwali, the festival sacred to Lakshmi, which is also known as the Festival of Light. So we are in a very auspicious period here, a period of heightened Shakti, a period in which, at least in my experience, the energies of the lineages of Durga, the lineages of goddess, many of which are mysterious and unknown to us, but very palpable as subtle energies that we feel. Along with that, the energy of my personal lineages, the lineages of my gurus, and of the hidden and mysterious lineages that actually hold the non-dual Shakta tradition. These lineages, these, let's call them secret or hidden lineages, they've existed certainly in India, Tibet, China. They've also existed in the West. Though in the West, of course, they're so hidden as almost to be extinct, except to the extent that they're being revitalized today by practitioners like you. So as we plunge into our class, I just want to start by reciting a hymn to the goddess. That's one of the openings of the Sri Durga Sapta Shloka Stotra. It's the garland of mantras, the garland of hymns to the goddess that are recited during Navaratri. So here we go, very short. She, the blessed goddess Mahamaya, seizes the minds of even the wise and draws them into delusion. Remembered in distress, you remove fear from every creature. Remembered by the untroubled, you confer even greater serenity of mind. Dispeller of poverty, suffering, and fear, who other than you is ever intent on benevolence towards all? Salutation be to you, Narayani, who are the good of all good, the auspicious one, to you who accomplish every intent, to you the refuge, the all-knowing shining Gauri. Salutations to you, Narayani, who are intent on rescuing the distressed and afflicted that take refuge in you, O Devi, who removes the suffering of all. O Devi, who exists in the form of all, who are the ruler of all, possessing all power, protect us from fears. O Devi Durga, salutation to you. When pleased, you destroy all afflictions. When displeased, you thwart all aspirations. No calamity befalls those who have taken refuge in you, and they who resort to you become a refuge to others. O ruler of all, may you allay all the miseries of the three worlds and in so doing annihilate all obstructions. With that and with the mantras, which we will recite in a few minutes, just let's consider that we have welcomed, and to use the ritual language of the Shakta lineages, summoned the goddess to be present with us tonight. But right before class started, I read a very very beautiful email from Eleanor. She wrote in response to a series of emails about the uprising of emotions. And it reminded me that there's a point in many of these teleclasses where it becomes really important to offer a segment on emotions. And obviously one reason for this is that emotional release is one of the universal experiences of Shakti-driven meditation. It's especially of a Durga, when we're working with a Durga mantra, which is a strong mantra, often practiced specifically to remove obstructions. And in the process of doing that, often brings them more intensely to our attention than we might feel comfortable with. So when you begin mantra practice, just know you'll almost invariably experiencing the energy in your mantra, excavating levels of your emotional body that you may not only be comfortable with, but you might not even know were there. So, you know, our inner world as individuals is essentially made up of thoughts and emotions. And of course, as we've been saying, our thoughts and emotions are totally connected. I know I don't have to tell you this, but I'm going to anyway. So, you know, our thoughts, especially narratives, stories we tell ourselves about why we're like this and why life is like this, always trigger emotions. And it works the other way. Emotions nearly always lead to thoughts, because when you feel something, you usually try to understand why you feel it. Sometimes you might even try to find out who you should blame for a particular emotion. So normally we create stories around our emotions, which often are not even fully factual. You know, for one example, the tears that arise in this class, which many of you are experiencing, I certainly do, these tears are often simply the outflowing of Shakti. In other words, when a particularly strong experience of presence begins to arise, it can leak through our eyes in the form of tears. And when we don't understand that the tears are a release, that they're there to lubricate and purify the heart, or even as an expression of wonder and gratitude. You know, I know when we play these mantras, Durga mantras that Krishnadas sings at the beginning of this class, I always tune in a little early and sing along, and I always find myself crying. So a lot of it is simply the rising of love, the rising of wonder, the rising of gratitude, or just the fact that we're experiencing a bit more Shakti than we're used to in the normal course of life. And when that's happening, we will often just kind of automatically make up a story about why we're crying. We remember a loss, a suffering that we experienced or are currently experiencing in relationship, and we believe that we're crying for that reason, when in fact, the tears have nothing to do with that. I had a dream quite a long time ago, during a period in my life, and you know, I was going to say in my sadhana, when I was really experiencing a lot of sadness and grief, and it had been going on for a couple of months. And in the course of this time, I had a dream in which I and a young woman were attending the University of Chicago Graduate School, and we went to see our advisor who was going to tell us the topic that had been assigned to us for our thesis. I know they don't assign thesis topics at the University of Chicago, but this is my dream. So he says to the young woman, he said, "Your topic, your thesis topic is sadness." And the girl said, "I don't want to write about sadness. I don't like that topic." So I piped up. I said, "Oh, I would be happy to write about that. I know all about sadness." And the advisor turned to me, looked me in the eye rather sternly, and said, "Your topic is not sadness. Your topic is grace." I realized, I mean, it was actually quite a big dream. And one of the things I realized was that the young woman was probably a younger version of myself, who was basically trying to outrun her negative emotions. But I also realized that my psyche was reminding me that this feeling was not something to identify with, that it was passing and that the underlying truth of my life, as of your life, every one of you, is Shakti, is grace. So this is why it's so important to, first of all, practice dropping stories if we want to work with our own tendencies and emotions. A lot of, you know, Elena's very beautiful email was a lot about dropping stories, and it's extremely important. But the tantric way of working with emotions starts with dropping the story, but it very quickly segues into working with the sensations within the story so that, because it is through sensation, it is through this phenomenon called felt sense that we actually have the best chance of getting in touch with the underlying Shakti that's present in all the emotions. So, my dear ones, let's begin by taking ourselves to the lake. Make sure that you're in a posture where you can be comfortable. Those of you who are listening while on a walk, you're absolved from sitting, but if you can possibly find a bench or someplace to sit and do this part of the practice before you continue listening, that would be great. It would deepen your experience. Let's begin by recognizing where we are. This is an imaginative exercise. We are in the Himalayas, seated around the most beautiful, crystalline, deep blue lake maybe in the world. Maybe Tahoe is that beautiful, and Tahoe is a pretty holy lake, but Lake Manasarovar in the Himalayas is a pulsing, endlessly grace-bestowing Shakti in itself. It's said in this region that the mountain, the lake sits at the foot of a mountain. The mountain is Shiva. The lake is Shakti. And if you've ever been there, you understand why this is said. So we are seated around the lake, and we can see the white-capped mountains in the not-too-distant distance, ranges and ranges and ranges of them, some of them lost in clouds. And we can feel the mist of grace that arises from the lake. And in this moment, as we settle ourselves here, we become aware of the presence of each one of us, seated in a circle around the lake. Perhaps you'd like to subtly invite someone that is not taking the course to be present here, to experience this connection. And begin now to become conscious of your posture. And in this moment of entering into our conversation, in entering into our Sangam, begin to focus on the breath, allowing the breath to enter your body as a soft wind that flows through the inhalation down to the base of the posture, grounding the sit bones, making your lower body heavy, and then with the exhalation, drawing your torso upward through the spinal column all the way up to the crown. Your shoulder blades release and melt onto the back. Your chest lifts and opens. Your head is poised as though held by a slender thread dropping down from the heavens. As you inhale, you allow the breath to soften. As you exhale, you have the feeling of letting go into this shared space. In your hands, in your cupped hands, you find a tea light. The tea light is held in a very beautiful jeweled cup. And in this moment, you place your intention for this evening, your intention for the week, your intention to benefit someone that you know or someone you don't know. You bring your intention into the flame. And then you place the flame in the lake. Behind your closed eyes, you become aware that the goddess Durga is sitting on the lake. She's fully present, filling the entire space, which is a liquid form of herself. And if you're so inclined, you may imagine the goddess as Simhasini, the lion rider, the warrior mother seated on her lion, or you may simply have the feeling that she exists as a presence of light, as a feeling. It really doesn't matter how you conceive of her. What matters is that you allow yourself to recognize that she's present with us. And with that recognition, that understanding, we'll chant our mantras, the mantras in praise of Shakti Shankari as the source of the power of all the assemblages of energies that manifest this world. We'll chant the Gayatri, invoking she who enchants the universe, the auspiciousness mantras, which we actually just spoke the English of in that invocation we did earlier. So we'll take a big breath in. I'll chant, and we'll chant each mantra two times. And as you chant, see if you can bring your awareness into the heart. Maybe place your hands over your heart and feel yourself connected to the Divine Mother, the enlightening, liberating Shakti, the grace-bestowing power who surrounds us and embraces us and carries us forward. Yasyonmesha nimeshabhyam jagata pralayadayo tam shakti chakra vibhava parabhavam shankaram stumaha. Yasyonmesha nimeshabhyam jagata pralayadayo tam shakti chakra vibhava parabhavam shankaram stumaha. Sarva mohinye vidmahe vishva charanye dhimahi tanno shakti prachodayat. Sarva mohinye vidmahe vishva charanye dhimahi tanno shakti prachodayat. Sarva mangala mangalye shive sarvatra sadike sharanye triambake gauri narayani namostute. Sarva mangala mangalye shive sarvatra sadike sharanye triambake gauri narayani namostute. We ask that through the power of our practice, all beings experience happiness and the causes of happiness. We ask that all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. We dedicate our practice asking that all beings be free of grasping, aversion, and dullness. We ask that we and all beings experience the equality of all that is. and so it is. You are feeling the presence of the goddess rising from the lake, experiencing her as a mist of grace and protection, experiencing her as a presence that wraps around each of us and all of us. And now begin to inhale and exhale, turning your focus inward to the natural rise and fall of the breath, feeling that each inhalation welcomes not only the particles of oxygen from the air, but also the particles of grace rising from the goddess seated on the lake. As you exhale, soften. Soften your face. Soften the muscles around your eyes. Inhale the mist of grace. Exhale, softening the shoulders, the neck, the belly. Inhale. With each exhale, feel that you are being invited to allow any areas of tension, those that you're aware of and those that you're not, to melt. Every inhalation welcomes grace. Every exhalation melts contraction from the body. And as each area of contraction melts a bit, you feel more and more present to yourself. Allow the breath to help you rest deeper and deeper into your own being. Going to continue tonight working with various subtle body practices, practices that target the energy that we call our energy body, our sukshma sharira. And I hope that all of you are noticing that each of the practices we're doing actually activates a different aspect, a different facet of our subtle experience and also our physical experience, because when we use the breath and subtle awareness to melt tensions in the body, what we're also doing is healing our physical body through the power inherent in the breath and in the mind. So we've just done a combination of visual imaginative practice, including mantra, with a specific invocation in which we summoned the deity. I find summoning to be kind of a strange word when it's related to a goddess figure, but What it really means is to, let's say, ask her to turn her attention very specifically to us, rather, you know, because we can assume that the Shakti is present everywhere, attentive to whatever arises in her awareness, but that it is possible through invocation to bring her more deeply present where we are at this moment. And all these practices target all four of our bodies, the physical, the subtle, the realms beyond the subtle, and what is called in Vedanta the supracausal body, the area of absolute pure awareness, where our individuality naturally melts into the higher realms. And I just want to say, I just want to remind you that this state, which is called the fourth state or Turiya, and in Vedanta is called the supracausal body because it's beyond all causes, that this state is everywhere, omnipresent in us, and therefore it can be experienced at any time. What this approach to practice does, at least in my experience, is it integrates the different layers and levels of our being. And this is one reason why working with different entrance points to meditation is important, because it touches different parts of you. But another reason that I like to work with different practices is because I've found it to be extremely important to work with several methods for opening up the inner world. The reason for this, of course, is partly that because we're each of us unique individuals, and our uniqueness doesn't demonstrate itself just through our temperament, through our bodies, through our skills, but also in how we respond to spiritual practice in general and at a particular moment in life. Sometimes when you initially learn a practice, it feels right just from the beginning. But often it doesn't really quite work until you find a way to make it personal for yourself, which is why it's so helpful to try out different bhavanas, different ways of languaging and instructions for a particular practice. And it's also true that a practice that seems opaque at one given moment, which you don't feel you get, will turn out to become utterly revelatory a few weeks or a month or a year from now, when you've penetrated through the practice that you've been doing is penetrated through another layer. As you develop, as you grow spiritually, and especially as your primary practice deepens, as your inner being becomes more saturated with sadhana shakti, you will also begin to get inner guidance in meditation about which technique will take you deeper at this moment, and especially about when it's time to let go of technique and just rest in your own being. In other words, meditating starts to teach you how to meditate. And that is really the way we learn to meditate. Even though a teacher can give you a lot of instruction and also a lot of empowerment, really it's your inner being, your inner guidance that is in charge. And as this starts to happen, you start to understand more deeply what's happening to you as you traverse the inner world. And you start to get a sense of what it feels like to shift out of an outward-focused state into a more internal state, how it feels to literally to move out of being parked in the physical body to being inside the subtle body. You notice how what you're thinking affects your posture. You learn how to ask questions in meditation, and to recognize the difference between spiritual insight and the voice of your inner critic or just what your mind tells you. And you become more and more interested in making sure that your practice is balanced. And it's this balance that I'm very concerned that we all get. You know, in the early days of practice, when a lot of purification is going on, some practices feel too intense because they bring up too much stuff. But as the system gets cleared out and we discover more and more about our own tendencies and our deeper spiritual capacities, which often take a while to realize that we possess, and how to move past your edge into new territory. And we also can begin to find practices to take refuge in even during the times when we don't feel like practicing. I just had a conversation with one of my friends who has, in the last couple of weeks, gone through what she was told was a mild to moderate case of COVID. She'd been vaccinated, so she didn't get sick enough to have to go to the hospital, and the virus didn't turn into pneumonia or even get very deeply into her lungs, but it just made her feel really, really terrible. And while it was going on, she didn't have the energy to meditate. So she played goddess chants, actually Durga chants, all day long, and that was what got her through. So there's always a practice you can do. Even if it's just remembering gratitude, that will bring you to a more empowered state, especially if you have cultivated a practice of turning to the Shakti, invoking the Shakti at the beginning of your day and at the end of your day as you sit for meditation. So that said, it's very important to interrogate your practice and understand the nuances of your own relationship with different practices. You know, especially during periods when there's a lot going on in your life. You might tend to not want to meditate past your comfort zone. And sometimes it's because there's expansion going on that's more than you're used to. And when that's the case, there's a real art to taking yourself right up to your edge and just a little past the place where you experience discomfort, but not going so far that you scare yourself or that you feel like it's too much. And if it does feel like too much, if there's such an expansion going on, just open your eyes and focus on your breathing. But there's another thing that Shakti, that meditation can do when there's a lot of Shakti, and that is it can bring up stuff that you have been very carefully hiding from yourself and everybody else. It's in some traditions, this is called samskaric burnoff or psychic detoxification. And it's one of the things that meditation is supposed to do. People that used to complain to my guru that when they meditated, they became irritable. They would come out feeling irritable. I actually asked this question myself during my first year. He would always say, it's not that meditation makes you irritable. You have irritability within you, and meditation is dredging it up so you can see it and learn how to let go of it. I have to say, if you don't experience some upheaval, you know, which could take the form of intense emotions or of feelings of numbness or dryness, you know, these are also signs of, you know, emotional, you know, the character of your samskaras. Some of us have the samskaras of intense emotionality. Some of us have so numbed ourselves, perhaps because these emotions felt unacceptable when we were children. So the form that purification is going to take is sometimes quite unexpected, and it's necessary. So it's very helpful at such times to have some modalities for working with what's coming up, and also to have a range of practices available. I discovered this when I was first practicing in the highly shaktified environment around my guru. But I used to be puzzled by a phenomenon that I didn't understand. I was doing two practices at that time. One was mantra, which was often quite blissful. But I also noticed that when I practiced mantra intensely, I would often experience a lot of emotional upheaval. I mean, I'd get intensely irritated, or I'd have a conversation with someone and my feelings would get hurt by some routine remark, and I'd find myself in tears. The other practice that I did regularly was an awareness practice, a witness self-inquiry, where I would sit and inquire inwardly, what is it that knows I'm meditating, or where is the witness of my mind? And, you know, as those of you who do this practice know, it's a very, very skillful way of getting in touch with the observing awareness that can help you ride out things that might ordinarily touch you off base. It's really an extremely skillful practice for life. And what I noticed was that the witness practice would make me feel detached, yogic, and somehow grown up, whereas in mantra practice, I often felt unbalanced and kind of childish, as though, you know, because I would actually be re-experiencing certain childhood emotions. But yet when I meditated as the witness, I missed the juiciness, the emotional rasa of the mantra, the direct hit of shakti that the mantra unleashed. And as time went on, I realized that these two approaches to meditative sadhana need to be done in tandem. First, because they epitomize two significant doorways into the direct experience of your sacred self, but also in a more mundane way, because each of them tends to open up one of the hemispheres of the brain. And if you do them more or less in tandem, that is, if you do both of them regularly, what you find is that your brain hemispheres begin to work better together. And so the mantra practice, at least initially, affects the limbic brain, the sometimes called the old mammalian brain or the emotional brain, whereas the witness practice is done with and connects us to the neocortex, which activates the objective, observing, so to speak, rational part of us. And these two sides of the brain are crucial for full human functioning, and so much of our, so to speak, success in maturing as humans comes from an ability to maintain a true balance between the rational, emotional, and intuitive parts of the brain. You know, so we need this combination of emotionally centered, feeling-based practices like mantra, chanting, connecting to personal deity, these practices that tend to open the heart, saturate our body and mind with palpable experience of liberating shakti. We also need the awareness practices, like awareness of awareness or witnessing. And we need inquiry that helps us transform our belief systems, which would include text study and thought-changing bhavanas. We're doing quite a bit of that here that directly target the runaway mental log. And of course, we want to open the physical body, as we might do through hatha yoga, tai chi, dance, or on a day-to-day level through simple postural alignment, really awareness of the vertical presence as we align along the spinal column, or through breathing into the body and letting the breath open our awareness. And along with all this, it is really important to find a few ways of practicing with our characteristic emotional blocks. Right now, I want to offer you a practice which I do a lot and which I've worked with some of you for. It is a tantric approach to emotional upheaval, and it's based on a dharana, a verse in a tantric text called the Vijnana Bhairava, which says, in essence, that when we are experiencing intense emotion, that within that emotion is an open door into the primordial shakti. So it's quite a mysterious and profound emotion, which maybe some of you have had a spontaneous experience of firsthand, but which we'll try to open up for ourselves in a few minutes of this practice. So, you know, once again, just open yourself to being breathed. Welcome the inhalation, feeling as though the particles of oxygen and the particles of prana are just flowing in with so much ease, enlivening your body. And with the exhalation, see if you can just let go into the field of breathing shakti. Let the face soften, let the belly soften. So just as we acknowledge and welcome the breath, the first step towards working with any emotion or feeling, especially what we call the bad feelings, is to acknowledge and accept that it's there. In our society, obviously, especially if we're spiritual people, we tend to believe that certain emotions are bad or negative, and that if we have them, it means that we're a failure as a yogi, or even that we're a bad person. So when resentment, jealousy, shame come, which, as far as I'm concerned, are the worst, resentment and shame are really painful emotions when you're feeling them. And one of the things that makes them so painful is that they're very deeply lodged in us. You know, we had a lot of reasons to resent our parents or others in our lives as children, and a lot of we were shamed for a lot of things, and we, you know, we stuff these feelings into our psyche, and they just come up from time to time. And when they come up, we tend to either surrender to them and get freaked out or paralyzed or just intensely negative, or we try to get rid of them in some way. And that feeling of needing to bypass them or surrender to them is our child self, the one who didn't know how to process intense feelings. You know this. But what we do as adult spiritual practitioners who understand the ever-flowing nature of Shakti is that we learn to meet the emotion, let ourselves have the experience of it, and in that allowing ourselves to experience it, we start to recognize that emotion flows just like everything else in our inner world. Emotion is not fixed. So our problem, actually, is that we fix it. You know, we fixate it. We have this idea, okay, I'm feeling jealous. That means I'm a jealous person. Doesn't mean you're a jealous person. You know this. It means that jealousy is moving in your system. And acknowledging it, allowing your experience, letting yourself hold the feeling and even enter into it with awareness, you eventually start to have a firsthand experience that the nature of emotion is Shakti. And this is what it is to do this kind of mysterious process called transmuting your emotions into energy. You know, it starts with recognizing the felt sense of the emotion. So in general, there are four ways that we work with emotions in yoga. First, the traditional spiritual religious method, which is to cultivate positive emotions and to use practices like mantra or working out or going for a run, you know, to soothe negative feelings and to cultivate positive ones. And these are terrific practices, you know, as is turning on the TV. You know, when things get really overwhelming, sometimes we just have to escape. But what's important if you're doing one of these practices is that we not work with aversion, with the feeling that our emotions are other or that they're bad, because that will truncate your ability to work with them sometime in the future when you want to confront an emotion directly. The second method is based on an insight that we spoke of last week, which is that your emotional reality is created by your thoughts. So actually it wasn't last week, it was earlier in this class. So, and this is where we practice shifting negative thoughts or substituting a positive feeling for a negative one. I have a friend who's doing the Course in Miracles right now, has been doing it for a couple of years. So the Course in Miracles uses language to kind of, I think the word is brainwash, and I mean this in a good way, to clear your mind, as the tantric texts do, of your dualistic understanding. So about 4 months ago, my friend's husband had a stroke-like incident, and he's very sick. He's partially paralyzed. It's a, as you can imagine, a very difficult situation. She has been refusing to have a negative thought about it, which is pretty extraordinary because, you know, she's the person who's, you know, kind of the, she's the main caretaker. She's the responsible person. What she does is every time she has a negative feeling, she'll say something like, there's nothing to fear because grace is holding us. And she uses these positive thoughts, which she's been cultivating for quite a while, to keep herself in a good state, in a very difficult situation. I'm pretty impressed with that. The third is to watch the thoughts and feelings with a sense of detachment. So the witness practice that we were talking about earlier. You know, again, it's a powerful practice. It really works. And it requires quite a bit of inner work in order to be able to do it on the regular. The fourth practice, which we're about to do, is based on cultivating the understanding that your feelings and emotions are flowing as Shakti, that they're arising and subsiding constantly, that feelings arise from the ground of the mind, which is Shakti, and stay for a while and then fall back into the ground of the mind, and that they're all expressions of the life force. Once we make the decision to recognize the flowing quality in emotions and work with them creatively, this practice in itself will begin to show us some of the sort of brilliant things about emotion. Emotions are part of our guidance system, actually. I'm not going to talk about that today. And they also can represent doorways into the infinite, as the Vijnana Bhairava quote that I gave you says. So many people define feelings and emotions differently. There are a lot of different definitions of feelings and emotions, but here's what I would say. A feeling is more subtle and more kind of inchoate, less specific than an emotion. You know, for instance, your feeling state is very often an expression of your particular energy signature. And we, you know, many of us have, you know, kind of intense energy, which can be activated as joie de vivre, as, you know, intense ability to kind of get into life, and can also be activated as anger, you know, or impulsivity. And some of us have a more laid back and more introverted energetic style. Some of us have a kind of mildly depressed style. Some of us tend to be more extroverted and bouncy and perky. So those are the, you know, kind of feeling states that are part of our karmic nature. Emotions are the intensification of these core feelings. And, of course, part of what makes them so intense is that they're almost always connected to a storyline. So, you know, for instance, you might have a vague feeling of sadness and start to ask yourself, okay, why am I feeling sad? And then you'll remember that your father died 2 years ago and that you still miss him. And you'll become sad about that. Or, you know, you had a misunderstanding with a friend and you're still mad about it. So, you know, your vague feeling of anxiety, because many of us have a kind of a feeling tone of anxiety that runs like an undercurrent under the rest of our life, your vague feeling of anxiety can become a full-fledged panic attack, especially if you have a particular samskara around this mood or emotion. The samskara will activate the storyline and set off the whole karmic drama that, you know, is going on in most of our lives in one way or another. So when you tune into the energy, the energetic core of the feeling or the emotion, and let it reveal that its source is actually the field of Shakti itself, what we start to see is that emotions and feelings always want to morph. They always want to flow. So we're going to do this practice now, and some of you may be dealing with something that's particularly strong for you, and you might want to make that the core of the practice. But for the rest of us, we're going to cultivate an emotional uprising by considering the last time you had a loss, a big loss, a loss that mattered to you. And I'm suggesting that it not be one of those giant lifetime losses, but if it is, it's okay. Just know that if you do decide to work with one of your major losses, that you're going to have to give yourself some, you might have to, I'm not saying you will have to, you might have to give yourself some time to process it. So just remember the last time you had a loss of a relationship with a friend, the loss of an important document that you accidentally erased from your computer, the loss of a job opportunity. And try to work with a loss that matters to you, but again, not necessarily one of the major ones in your life. So remember what you want to work with. Remember that that loss, most of us have one that's fairly close to the surface. All the losses of the pandemic are pretty good opportunities. So recall the situation of loss. Just remind yourself of it. See if you can take yourself back to that moment. And then take yourself into the feeling state around the loss. Make it big in your psyche. Make it so that the experience of this loss becomes the major tone of your inner consciousness. And you will tell, have told yourself a story about it, and you might have words that are coming up like, this is so terrible. How, I didn't deserve this. I'm never going to recover. Things would be so much better if this hadn't happened. Whatever triggers the feeling, use words to trigger the feeling, and this will give you a little bit of a sense of how much words do indeed trigger feelings. Now, drop the story. Ask yourself, can I let go of this? Or is it really true that I'll never get over this? Or just breathe it out right now. Breathe it out. Breathe the story out. But don't breathe out the emotion just yet. Let yourself notice the sensations and the feelings, the felt sense around the emotion. If it's anger, what does it feel like? Where is it in your body? Does it feel hard? Does it feel thick? Does it feel sharp? If it's sadness, does it feel swampy? Is there a sinking feeling? Are your eyes scrunching up? And is there tension around your cheeks, as often happens when the feeling is of shame? Notice if the feeling has a color. Notice if, as you find its location in your body, and there may be several locations, notice if there's a shape. So you're meditating on this emotion as a kind of an energy packet being held in your body with no story. So the sensations, the density, the color, the shape, that, but not the story. So imagine that there's a, I hope I'm not doing don't think of a monkey by saying, Don't think of a story, that's not bringing up a story. If so, just breathe it out. So now imagine that there's a space around the energy packet of the emotion. Literally feel that a large, soft spaciousness surrounds that part of your body where the energy is felt and extends outward. So you're feeling the presence of this spacious container or circle, and you're holding the denser energy of the emotion within that spacious container. This space is one of the great markers of for awareness. So the space that you're holding around this energy is the space of awareness. Now, see if you can dive right into the center of the emotional energy. Really feel it from within while keeping some sense of space around it. And I know it's probably starting to morph. Maybe it's been morphing all along. But see if you can toggle between them. Noticing and examining the felt sense of the emotional energy and the felt sense of the awareness space that you've created. And notice what's happening. What you probably are finding is that, I hope you're breathing, that as the breath flows in and out, that it kind of expands the feeling of spaciousness. And that the edges of the dense emotion are starting to soften, become less distinct. Now, at this point, there are several things you could do. If it's a feeling that you think is important to understand, you might inquire into it, asking the feeling, not your mind, but asking the feeling what it has to show you. And if the feeling is really showing you something, telling you something, that information is probably going to come up as an intuitive gestalt of knowingness, not necessarily mediated by a thought. So it's not like you're hearing a voice saying, this feeling of sadness is related to a moment that I experienced with my mother when I was 18 months old. It's not going to tell you that. It's going to feel something, what the truth is about it. And the other thing you could do, and that's very skillful to do, and that's, I think, the basic of this practice, is just hold the two together and notice how the emotion begins to evanesce and morph and change. And another thing you can do with it is play with it. There's a practice that I like to do that's kind of a creative way of working with an emotion. Given the fact that everything that's going on in your inner world is an expression of the creative Shakti, how would you like to creatively engage with this emotional energy? So imagine that a hand comes into your psychic space and gently squeezes, crunches the emotional energy into particles so that it no longer has the original density, and then just focus on the space remaining as this emotional energy dissolves. Notice the feeling. And now bring back the dense emotion. Recreate it. Imagine that you're taking particles of mind energy and shaping them into this intense negative feeling of anger or shame or jealousy. And feel the sensations, feel the color, feel the place in your body. And once again, notice how fluid the energy within this emotion actually is. And how when you work with it as energy, it can bring you closer and closer to the Shakti within it. And now I'm going to ask you to do a very subtle practice with this energetic space that you've been cultivating. I'm assuming that the emotional energy has kind of morphed and evanesced, but even if it hasn't, you can still do this practice. So take a moment to firm your posture. And begin to repeat, Om Hrim Shrim Dum Durgaye Namaha. Repeat it inwardly, really offering it into the space in your inner body where you've been practicing with the emotion. And begin to focus, as we were doing last week, on the space where the mantra ends, where Om Hrim Shrim Dum Durgaye Namaha comes to an end. And again, if thoughts are arising, come back to the mantra. Focus as intently as you can on the resonance of the syllables Om Hrim Shrim Dum Durgaye Namaha, resonating, resounding in your mind and your inner space. And now imagine a hole, an opening, a softening in the energetic space at the end of the mantra. It's like a wormhole in space or an opening in a cloud. And take your attention, not your body. Sometimes when we do this practice, we try to bring our body through it. Take your attention through that hole and begin to move as attention through the field of your own inner consciousness as it stretches out in front of you. So let yourself move. This is not an intellectual exercise. You're going to use your inner senses to feel the texture of your own deeper field of awareness. You're moving deeper and deeper into the space, the mind space, that will begin to open as you become willing to let your attention flow through the field of your own mind. And what I think you will probably find is that there actually is no limit to the mind. Just let yourself move through it, noticing, does it have edges? Is there any place where it comes to an end? Is there a border? Or can you just keep flowing deeper and deeper into the energy of mind? If you come to a place that feels blocked, imagine yourself cutting another hole in it. As you move your focus out of the identification with being behind your skin suit and into a sense that your attention is free to roam through the inner sky. And just take rest there. Have this sense of letting yourself rest in the energy of mind itself, in the presence which is the Shakti of your inner field. Thoughts arise, gently breathe them out, just let yourself be present with the space of your deeper mind, your deeper awareness. Recognizing the mind space as Shakti, as creative pulsation as a ray of the supreme reality manifesting as your individual mind. And feel that the thoughts that arise and subside in the mind are evanescent like clouds in the sky and do not affect the underlying presence. Abhinavagupta says about the energy of your mind, that very Shakti is the supreme state, subtle, omnipresent, the nature of immortality, free of obscuration, peaceful, yearning for pure being alone, and without beginning or end. How long can you rest in the space of your mind as pure pulsing Shakti? And can you also be aware of that part of the mind that's aware that you're resting? As you cultivate your ability to rest in pure mind space and in the subtler layer of mind that we call awareness, notice the very subtle pulsation that is constantly throbbing within this space. The more you can focus on that pulsation within the mind, the more you come to realize that every thought, movement, and word is permeated with Shakti and is Shakti. Gradually bring your attention back to the vibration of the breath, the pulsation of the breath. Perhaps you can feel how breath arises and subsides within an expanded field of mind. I'm sure that by now that you're again aware of your body boundaries, or maybe not. But the breath arises in a space beyond the body, is breathed into the body, and then flows out through the pores of your body, helping to open your sense of being boundaried by skin so that you can start to intuit how expanded your mind is capable of becoming, how your little mind can expand into a mind that potentially is able to contain the universe. We're practicing now with the energy body, the subtle body, which is where most of us are most easily able to experience our energetic connection with Shakti. And we're going to continue with subtle body practices. Specifically, we're going to practice with that most mysterious and also accessible system of traveling through the subtle body, which is, of course, the central channel and the chakras. So just a word or two about the energy body and why it's so deeply significant in this process of transformation and transmutation. Our sense of individuality, our feeling of being a particular person, is actually velcroed into our subtle body. You know, the subtle body in the yogic scriptures, especially tantric texts, is called the city of eight. And the eight, it refers to eight functions that let us experience life. The intellect, the ahamkara or ego. Ahamkara literally means the I maker, the part of the us that takes the experiences that come into our system and defines some of them as mine and some of them as not mine. That's what we call ego. It's the mechanism that makes us feel like a particular individual. The manas, or sense mind, which draws in information from the senses, and the five sense energies, the five inner senses, which you'll remember are the sense of sight, the sense of smell, the sense of hearing, the sense of taste, and the sense of touch, which are the, as it were, the sources of all of our sensory experience. What's very significant in yoga is that the body is not considered the seat of our individuality, of simply because the body is temporary. You know, that according to the yogic view of the world, our subtle body will, at death, leave the physical body and transmigrate, move into different worlds and move into new bodies. So the body is just a costume that we're wearing for 60, 70, 80, 90 years, and which we will eventually discard. But the subtle body, the Poryastika, the city of eight, that's us. That's coming, that's going with us, or that's going as us, until we, as it were, purify it of everything that makes us identify with that. So this is one of the reasons why practicing with the chakra system is so powerful and important, because what the chakras actually do is encode within themselves all the different layers of our experience, from the densest and most physical to the most transcendent. And as we become more and more familiar with the journey up and down the central channel, that journey that opens and closes different chakras along the way, as we follow that journey, we become more and more able to literally integrate our physical, highly embodied self with that part of us that is everywhere. Find yourself a posture. It's really important in doing this particular set of processes to remember the importance of the vertical alignment. The Sushumna Nadi, the central channel, which runs, as I think, I suspect all of you know, it runs from the perineum at the base of the torso all the way up through the crown, and you can extend this vertical column down to the center of the earth below and up to the center of the sun. so that in certain moods and meditative spaces, you can actually imagine yourself being suspended on this vertical column. Find yourself a posture, and let me explain to you once again, let me guide you once again through the posture that we were practicing with last week. Inhale, feeling that the base of your posture, the hips and thighs are becoming heavy and grounded, sinking into the seat. Exhale and let the spinal column elongate upwards. Let the shoulder blades release onto the back and become aware of sitting right over the center of the triangle formed by your pubic bone in front and the two sits bones that support you. You're seated over the open space in the center of that triangle. So let yourself settle into it. And then take a moment to circle your torso so that you become aware that there is this line, this central meridian line that you actually can become slightly aware of as you circle your body around it. It's the core. And of course, it's, as we know, the Sushumna Nadi, the central channel, runs parallel to the spinal column. It's within the subtle body. It's not a physical core. But just as the spinal column is the core of our nervous system, the Sushumna Nadi is the core of our subtle nervous system, which consists, again, I know this is not news to most of you, it consists of a web of channels called nadis, which carry pranic energy throughout your entire body and which also connect you to the subtler realms of reality. One of the most significant pieces of chakra lore is that the human body, including the human subtle body, is made of the same five elements that form everything in the universe. That just as there's solidity in the earth, there's solidity in the bones and flesh of our bodies. As there's fluid in the oceans, there's fluidity in our blood and tears and mucus. Our bodies have heat or fire. Our bodies contain air in the form of breath. And there's space inside every atom and molecule. And again, you know, those of you who are sophisticated about chakras know that the earth element is associated with our ability to experience rootedness, the water element with healing, the fire element with confidence and willpower and action. Also happens to be the fire element, the seat of the goddess Durga. So by calling forth the subtle elements in this chakra practice, they actually balance ourselves physically, psychologically, and spiritually. Again, I know that I'm talking to a group of people who are very familiar with the chakras, but I also want to ask you to just find them physically as we start this. Finding the root chakra at the base of the body, below the coccyx, just in front of the coccyx, within the perineum, that ridge of flesh between the anus and the sexual organ, the center of the earth element. Just touch it with your finger. And if you want to activate your sense of presence there, the best way to do it, I find, is to do Kegels if you're a woman, like contracting and releasing your vagina, or that gesture that men do when you stop the stream of urine. It's the same contractive gesture. Or contracting your anus, just making a short, a very brief mula bandha in a lock. The idea being not that we hold these locks, but that we use them to activate our sense of this chakra, and then bring your attention and your hand up to the lower abdomen, about 5 finger widths below the navel, just above the pubic bone, or just even parallel with the pubic bone on the inside of the body. And to activate this, or to activate your sense of it, just try slightly toning the muscles of your lower abdomen. This is the center of the water element, and it governs our reproductive organs. I actually believe, and it's my experience, that sexuality as such is in the Muladhara chakra, and that the second chakra, the Swadhisthana, is really about generativity and healing. In other words, the fruits of sexual engagement rather than the sexual engagement itself. And of course, this is physically the center of the uterus and also of the prostate. I know that in the male, the storehouse of sperm is hanging slightly below the body, but there's a part of it that's also inside the body. The third chakra at the region of the navel is the fire center. Physically, it governs our digestive system, and it's psychologically, it's a center of personal will and the capacity for action. And as I said earlier, it's the seat of Durga's Shakti. The Muladhara is, there are various deity energies in each one of these chakras. And in the Muladhara, the Muladhara is the seat of Brahma, the creator god, because this is where the human body comes into creation. It's also the seat of Ganesha, the elephant-headed deity. And, of course, it's the place where the resting Kundalini hangs out. The second chakra is connected to Lord Vishnu, the sustaining power of the universe, and his Shakti Lakshmi. The third chakra to Durga, and also to Agni, the fire god. The heart chakra, so again, in activating the third chakra, it's very helpful to draw in the navel and start to feel its presence behind the navel. And the heart chakra, of course, is, we're not finding it in the physical heart, but behind the breastbone, in the center of the chest. It's the center of the air element of prana. It governs the heart and lungs, and it's very much, as most of us know, it's what's often called the assemblage point. It's the place where most of us feel most personally seated. You know, when we point to ourselves, as often said, we point to the chest. The fifth chakra is at the base of the throat. It's associated with the ether element. It's the center of speech. And our intuitive creativity is associated with this. The sixth chakra is in the very center of the head, in the space corresponding to the space between the eyebrows. It's the center of mind and of higher intuition, visionary experience. And the crown chakra at the fontanelle, the place where the baby's soft spot is located, also extends beyond the head to a spot around 12 finger widths above the crown. And when we're able to enter that space, or specifically when the rising Kundalini enters that space, we actually enter the domain, the pure domain of the highest self. So thank you, those of you who are already familiar with the chakras, thank you for tracing them up the body. And if you've fallen out of your upright posture, once again allow it to firm. And sense the presence of this slender column of energy extending from the base of your spine up through the crown, the subtle axis of your body. As the breath flows in, let your attention move down this column towards the perineum. As the exhalation rises, let your attention move up the center of the column towards the crown. don't worry about trying to visualize the central channel. It's very, very subtle, and we kind of can't make it up. But as you let the breath carve out this pathway between the Muladhara and the Sahasrara and allow the breath to move you along it, it begins to become more and more open, more and more familiar. And you can actually begin to center yourself there, because it really is the true core of your being. It is your true center. So as the breath carries your attention down towards the Muladhara and up towards the Sahasrara, place your attention in the region of the perineum and imagine that you're sitting on a beach ball of energy that bisects your hip bones. And also enters the earth, so that you're literally seated on a ball of earth energy, which is at once subtle and deeply grounding. You're supported by this Pilates ball-shaped field of earth energy at your base. And with the downward moving inhalation, your attention gets more and more deeply present to this region. And this, by the way, is how you ground. Not so much by putting your feet on the earth, although that's a good thing to do, but by tuning into this subtle region, which is the true Muladhara Chakra. Now sense that energy from the earth flows up into your perineum, into this space at the very base of your body. The energy is made of light. It has a reddish-brown color. Deep rust, like red soil, and it's deeply nurturing and sustaining. So feel this energy spreading through your lower body, through the buttocks and thighs, the knees and calves and feet. See if you can feel the nurturing, solid, grounding quality of this energy. Feel sustained by this subtle earth at your base. Have this feeling, I am held and sustained by my mother, the earth. If the mind wants to leap up from that place, because sometimes it's hard to keep your energy there, just let your thoughts go and move down into the Muladhara with the inhalation. See if you can deepen your felt sense of the root chakra. And then becoming aware of the central channel, the column of energy that runs up the center of the body. Let your awareness flow a little bit up that column to the second chakra. the center in the lower belly. And again, tone your lower abdomen if you want to become more powerfully aware of it. This is the center of the water element. Can you feel your belly filling with the deep, calm water of a tropical ocean? Just as the ocean is the source of life on the planet, the water in your second chakra is the generative element in your body. It's the deepest source of creativity. And it is that water that becomes the source of the deepest healing you can experience. So with every inhalation, feel your awareness centering in the area of the lower belly, in the Svadhisthana chakra, the second chakra. Your mantra is, I am healed. Om Rim Shrim Dum Durgaye Namaha. I am healed. The deep currents of the ocean within my second chakra hold everything that is needed to heal me on every level, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And with that profoundly positive understanding, inhaling down into the second chakra, feel that with the exhalation, your attention moves up the central channel to the navel region. And to find it, you might want to contract your belly, pull your navel in and out a couple of times until you actually get a strong physical sense of it. And then bring your awareness into the center of the body towards the back. This region of the third chakra is a circle of energy that extends through your body just below the navel to just above the diaphragm. And you're in the center of the fire element, the region of will and action. As you breathe into this center, let the breath fill it and notice the sensations there. If you have if it's hard for you to feel your third chakra, use your imagination to kindle the fire there. Feeling that there is actually a warm, blazing flame, an inner fire, giving off a gentle warmth, or perhaps revealing itself as soft, glowing coals, or as dancing, leaping flames. Enjoy the warmth of the fire in your belly, the fire in your navel. And as you inhale, feel that the inhalation literally pours fuel into the flames, and that with the exhalation, they rise and fill the entire region of your belly with light and brilliance and warmth and vitality. The thought is, I am filled with vitality. I am fearless. I am filled. I am on fire with vitality. I am fearless. Om Rim Shrim Dum Durgaye Namaha. This is her place. She is the warrior mother who lives in your third chakra, your Manipura. Breathe in and out of the third chakra, feeling how incredibly enlivening and powerful this part of your body really is. Inhaling down into the warmth of the third chakra. Exhale, letting your attention flow upwards into the area in the very center of the chest behind the breastbone, the region of the heart chakra. And here, of course, all of us are more familiar, more intimate with the heart center. Even if we feel the heart is closed, which sometimes it just does, nonetheless, we know this place. So notice how the heart feels. Notice its energy. Let your attention with the breath flow around the whole region of the upper chest, touching the lungs and the heart. And really offering the mantra, Om Hrim Shrim Dum Durgaye Namaha, into the heart. Feeling how the shakti within the mantra expands in the heart. The heart is the center of air, the center of feeling, of touch. The quality of the air element is touch. It caresses us. It holds us. It embraces us. And of course, it's also the center of emotions. In the heart, our emotions can be purified and transmuted into compassion, into kindness, and of course, into love. Feeling the energy in the heart, imagine it filling with a gentle breeze that gently expands the heart with every inhalation and every exhalation. The color of the heart may be soft rose, like the color of a sunset. And as the air of the breath, the wind of the breath moves through the heart, sense it gently expanding and opening, expanding with the breath and the rhythm of the heartbeat. Let the air from outside touch the air of the inner heart. And allow yourself to recognize, I am loved. I am loved. I am moved by love. I am held by love. I am loved. I am love. Rest for a moment or two in the heart. As the air of the heart expands, your awareness flows upward through the upper chest into the region at the base of the throat. sense the energy, feel the energy in the throat. Notice if there's a contraction in the throat. And if it feels like there is one, like your throat is blocked or contracted, breathe into it and feel that with the expansion of the exhalation, it softens and opens. This is the subtle center of higher will and intention and expression and voice. And its element is ether, pure space. For so many of us, the throat chakra is the place where the issue of surrender to higher will is played out. So the contraction in the throat center comes from our wanting to hold on to the individual will, which is constantly being challenged by the truth that our lives are orchestrated by Shakti. And as the energy in the throat is purified and expands, we experience the spaciousness of our own essential purity and full alignment with the natural rhythm of the higher will of Shakti. And because that will is always to create, in those moments when we allow the throat chakra to open and relax, we become aware of the incredible creativity of our own being. To feel the throat area filled with space. It is open, it's empty, it's colorless. It wants to expand. So as the breath flows into the throat, as it touches the throat, allow the exhalation to soften and open any contractions in the throat chakra. And have the thought, I am inspired by the creative force of the Supreme Shakti. Shakti herself moves as creative flow, as creative speech through my voice, through my words, and through my thoughts. Inhaling and exhaling, sense more and more deeply the profound subtlety of this center, which is the place of creative inspiration. And as the spaciousness expands upward, your attention is drawn into the center of the head, to the space behind the forehead, behind the third eye. This is the chakra of the mind. And your experience here can be either of the thought-clogged individual mind, or the open, spacious, divine mind. the expanded mind of Shakti herself. Feel as though your head is the sky. Like that Magritte painting that some of you know. Your head has become sky. Absolutely open, free and wide. Thoughts and feelings float by like clouds. And you feel the wordless knowing the unlanguaged, completely confident knowing that allows you to see into the seams of reality. Pure intuition. As you inhale and exhale into the sky of the head, there is no thought, but there is a wordless recognition that you are awareness, that you are the knower, that you are connected to all that is. Let the inhalation and exhalation widen and expand the sky of your mind. Noticing again, asking yourself, are there any boundaries here? Is there any place this mind cannot reach? And sense the knowing that recognizes that mind is limitless. And with the next exhalation, allow your attention to flow up through the crown, noticing that in the space above the crown, subtle illumination, a subtle sense of light particles. And for some of you, it may emerge as a blazing light, like the blazing sun, which is actually present in this region. For most of us, there's a sense of luminosity, which just as the sixth chakra, the mind in the sixth chakra, can expand into infinity, as awareness flows into that highest center, the mind becomes pure luminosity, pure light. Your awareness is, I am radiance. I am light. And you begin to become aware once again of the central channel and to inhale this flow of light down into your sixth chakra, into the sky at the center of your head. Inhale and exhale once again with a feeling that light is being drawn into the whole region of the head. Inhale. Inhale now into the throat. Drawing the light of the topmost aspect of your being into your throat, radiating your throat. Inhaling and exhaling into your throat, empty of any flesh and filled with light. And with the next inhalation, allow the light to flow down into your heart. Exhaling, sense the light in the heart rising upward through the throat, through the head, and up to the luminosity above the crown, and then drawing more of that luminosity back through the fontanelle, down through the head and throat, and into the heart. Om Rim Shrim Dum Durgaye Namaha. You're celebrating the light of consciousness with the mantra of the goddess. And with the next inhalation, the light is drawn into the region around the navel, filling your entire lower chest and all the organs there, filling your digestive system and the subtle fire in that region with the radiant light of your highest truth. Your entire belly is irradiated with luminosity. And with the next inhalation, your awareness is drawn to the lower belly, to the second chakra. And you sense the light flowing through the entire lower abdomen, purifying any old trauma or emotional residue there, opening the belly, to the kind of healing that is more than physical. To the kind of healing that generates love and peace through the world. Inhaling and exhaling, feel the second chakra, the whole region of the pelvis, filling with light. And draw with the next inhalation that light down into the Muladhara, allowing it to flow through the anus, the sexual organ, and into the wider extended Muladhara below the body. Your body is filled with light, and your awareness now moves up and down through the center of the body, the inhalation flowing the light of the topmost center, down through the body, through the central channel, down to the Muladhara, the exhalation flowing that light back up through the central channel, irradiating your entire body with the light of the highest center. You don't have to breathe. You're being breathed. The central channel, which is the true core of your being, which is filled with the Shakti of the primordial goddess. She is breathing you as your awareness flows down with the inhalation, up with the exhalation. And every part of your body feels its aliveness. As we bring our class to a close, create an intention for yourself that for the rest of the evening, you will keep bringing your awareness into the central channel and allowing yourself to cultivate the feeling of the breath flowing in and down to the Muladhara with the exhalation, the inhalation, flowing up to the Sahasrara with the exhalation, flowing between your topmost divine aspect and your most earthy qualities, integrating heaven and earth, sky and body, filling you with presence and love. Have a beautiful rest of your evening or day, a beautiful week. See you next week. I'd love it if you shared anything that you've experienced tonight on the listserv. So much love to all of you. Good night.
Om Namah Chandrikaya. Om Namah Chandrikaya. Om Namah Chandrikaya. Jayanti Mangala Kali Badrakali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shivadatri Swaha Swadhanamostute Jayatvam Devi Chamande Jaya Bhutatiharini Jaya Sarvagate Devi Kalaratri namostute Madukai Tava Hidravi Hidatri Varade Namaha Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Dvisho Mahishasura Nirnasha Kashi Bhaktanam Sukade Namaha Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Dvisho Dehi Shambhasya Eva Shambhasya Dhumrakshasya Chamadini Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Visho Dehi Natebhyaha Sarvadha Bhaktya Chandike Kuritapahe Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Visho Dehi Dehi Sobhagyam Arogyam Dehi Me Paramasukam Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Visho Dehi Videhi Devi Kalyanam Videhi Paramam Shriyam Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Visho Dehi Himachala Siddhana Samstute Parameshwari Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Visho Dehi Indrani Pati Sabhavam Pujite Parameshwari Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Visho Dehi Devi Prachanda Daradanda Daitya Darpa Vinashi Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Visho Dehi Patni Manorama Dehi Manovritanu Sarani Haranim Durga Samsara Sagarasya Kalova Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Dvisho Dehi Rupam Dehi Jayam Dehi Yasho Dehi Dvisho Thank you.
know that you can show me upon me, down me, assure me.